Hello and welcome to a new episode of Talking Balls with me, Adam Lindsay. Stephen Gerrard's enjoying an unexpected mid-season break after his sending off against Manchester United, which has given him the opportunity to start planning for life after football. He's considering a move into acting and has already been offered a role in a blockbuster prequel, Gone in 38 Seconds. Meanwhile, So Solid Crew have announced their intention to release a song in honour of the Liverpool captain. It's been delayed, though, because Romeo's really struggling to come up with an extra 17 seconds of material. In a bizarre move, Dion Dublin has been named as the new host of Homes Under the Hammer. The BBC's also announced a new spin-off show, which surely will be even more successful than the original, called Alan Shearer Under the Hammer. And Andy Carroll has erected a 15-foot replica of the Angel of the North in his back garden to remind him of home. He's also planning on installing a 200-foot replica of a penis to remind him he's a massive bellend. Joining me this week, a man who's absolutely delighted to see Ireland win the Six Nations, Mr. Pete Strong.
Good weekly.
And a man who's absolutely delighted to see England fail to win the Six Nations, Mr.
Delighted.
Douglas Walker.
Delighted doesn't even cover it. I was ecstatic. I like those jokes this week. They were to the point, weren't they? They were blunt.
they
started off. I can never tell how much of them is true.
Right.
Like, has he erected the Angel of the North replica?
That's true.
He has done that, right? That's not just a setup.
No. Good. Usually the first line is true.
Usually. You never can tell. It's been April Fool's Day.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Hard to know. But they were. I like those.
Thanks. It's always nice to get the approval of internationally recognised comedy star Douglas Walker. Anyway, let's move on to our first topic then this week. And it's a weird story to come out of Germany, actually, that they're considering making doping a criminal offence in Germany. This is a genuine story. There's no, is this a real joke or not? It's not a joke. It's not a ridiculous punt. This is a genuine story. I just thought, no need to dress this up. It's an interesting thing to talk about. Should we make doping in sport a criminal offence?
First of all, ask, when they say they're going to make doping an offence, do they have a set of sports that this applies to? Is it?
No, they're saying for all professional sports people.
All professional
sports people. If you are found guilty of doping, that it will be a fraud offence, and therefore you can be jailed.
Because I was thinking about it, and it seems that fraud is the only way you could go with kind of justifying it. Because it seems... My first thought is, it seems odd to take a rule of, of a game that people don't have to take part in. It's something they've signed up to do, and so then it's, sports have rules, and if you break those rules, you're going to get sanctioned within the sport. But then to take that and make it illegal, because presumably the drugs involved aren't illegal in themselves.
No.
Or else it would already be a criminal offence.
Yeah.
So, it'd be weird to suggest that, doping is going to be illegal, and then you could make any of the other, take any other rule from football or athletics or whatever and say, right, that's not, two false starts, prison, right? And then, so that seems weird, but I guess the idea is that you're going to earn loads of money by cheating in this way, which does seem... some way dishonest.
Well, you're earning more money, and I think there's the idea of prevention is, are any sanctions that a sporting body can give working or doing anything to actually stop it from happening? And it's a interventionist government move, I think, of thinking, well, is this going to make people stop?
We're talking about interventionists. I mean, what do the sports federations think about that? Like FIFA or
I imagine FIFA would do their nuts.
Yeah, they're notoriously against. And like a lot of
I'm getting more on board now that you say that.
But like a lot of sports, the idea of government interfering in their administration of the game is just anathema. It's just like, why? How could you do that? Surely they're not going to agree to this. And if Germany are doing it, but it's just Germany, would it be just Germany doing it? Or are they thinking if they do it, other countries will start doing it?
So what they're what they're literally saying is that the 7,000 professional athletes that are covered by their national testing program will be affected by the new law. It won't be if we're playing a Champions League game against Borussia Dortmund and you get drug tested after the game and you fail the drug test, you can get prosecuted. It's only German athletes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is going to raise issues of jurisdiction like that, though, right? Like,
because not everyone is going to agree to do it.
Because if your German athletes are playing for a German football club,
mm-hmm.
and they get, they're found guilty of this.
Yeah,
can they then just sign for a Spanish club and go play in Spain?
Potentially, if there's no extradition treaty between the two.
Well, but like, no, but it's probably not going to be a jail term, is it? Do you think it'll be a jail term?
I think they are proposing.
Really?
Fraud, yeah. If they're going to do it as fraud, I mean.
Let me just see if there's any. Yeah, a jail term of up to 10 years.
Woo!
Mm. So it gives the incentive for it not happening. Yeah. Just saying, Lance Armstrong, multimillionaire who lives in all these mansions, who's already finished cycling. You can't cycle ever again. You know, what's that actually doing? If you said Lance Armstrong, multiple liar and fraudster, 10 years in jail, mate.
Yeah.
Then
that's true. I mean, I guess, because I was going to say, what are the, you know, are the sports doing? I like, because that American chap got, he's just been banned from tennis recently, hasn't he? I forget his name.
American chap?
Yeah, I'm sure he's American. And he's just, because he got done a few years ago, but then it got overturned. Because
Pete Sampras.
Yeah, that's it. Pete Sampras. He got done a few years ago.
Yeah, let's libel Pete Sampras.
You can't libel the dead, mate. So Pete Sampras allegedly got done for doping a while ago, but then he was one of those, oh, my trainer put it in my drink sort of things.
Right.
So he got off with it, but then he's just been found guilty again.
What, a second time, like a separate, like
separate occasion.
They appealed and got, or it was a separate occasion.
Separate occasion. And he's been found guilty again, and he's been given a 15-year ban. So effectively, that's his career done.
Yeah.
I saw Andy Murray chatting about it. Andy Murray was like, yeah, good work.
Andy Murray loves the massive, huge, draconian drug measures. He's all for it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Do you think he knows something when you don't?
It's definitely got nothing to do with major questions being raised about one of his major rivals and use of drugs. But
any clean athlete is presumably going to be totally
I'm on board. I think it's a great thing to do. I'm just saying that, you know, Andy Murray might have won a few more majors if a certain tennis player hadn't been taking loads of drugs.
What? Sue Barker.
Yeah, Sue Barker. She loves it.
you can tell. Bet she has great games of WAP and Next at the weekend. people just show her a photo of Saturday night. Yeah. So, Sue, what happened next? But yeah, because he says in that video, he's like, the ideal situation, you know, he's like, oh, in an ideal world, you'd get tested every day, but that obviously couldn't happen.
It would be a bit annoying as well.
Yeah, he's saying that
now.
Also,
if he had to get tested on Sunday,
it would add up every... you know, because they take blood.
Blood loss, yeah.
It's add up if they took a bit every day.
Exactly. You know, we're already in a crisis with not enough people donating blood. And all of a sudden, Andy Murray's going to need a few pints every day.
Yeah.
He hasn't thought it through.
The nature of the British public is such that probably more people would donate blood if they thought it was for, you know, help Andy win Wimbledon.
No, you would get a significant fall in the amount of English people.
No.
But in Scotland, it would go through the roof.
English people want a Wimbledon champion.
Well, like, if amazing athletes, you take loads of performance enhancers,
Gatorade, were you going to say that?
Blood samples. You know, it's like, surely you'd create, like, why is someone not broken in and, like, taken them and, like, used it to, like, you know, improve their own performance? Do you know what I mean?
What?
Wait a second. What the hell are you talking about?
Using the enhanced
you're suggesting
blood, like superheroes.
What you're saying, Pete, you're suggesting that we break into a doping agency laboratory.
Steal the enhanced blood and use it to enhance ourselves, form a superhero team.
I think you should stop talking right now because... No. Not because it's madness.
Because
there is some movie rights in this. And, you know, Talking Balls could use the...
that's the Talking Balls
use
movie.
The royalties.
So what you said, why don't people
Listen, this argument does not stand up to any scrutiny.
I don't think he doesn't even mean other athletes. He just means people
just
in general.
Normal gadgets.
No, I mean athletes.
We're going to have superhero posties going up and down the street carrying a whole
up and down.
All that blood probably does just go to waste.
Oh yeah, definitely. They just throw it away.
Whereas they could be like, all right, you're a hard worker. You know, like those...
give it to people in essential services.
You know those caffeine things you get to roll under your eye for businessmen in those adverts where they're like, you have a hard-working life. You know, just like start selling people doped up sportsman blood.
Or pretty soon, Marvel, you know, all them movie stars that have signed the contract with Marvel are going to get to the end of their contract. Marvel are going to need some new superheroes to remake the Avengers. Let's go to them. Guys, we got some blood.
Galacticos.
Yeah.
Guys, as soon as this is over, I'm going to go and start writing that screenplay.
Good.
Anyway.
But Pete, should it be illegal?
Yes. What do you reckon? Should it be illegal to be a criminal offence?
Should it be a criminal offence to take drugs, Pete Strong?
I think it strikes me as strange because there are other ways in which you can cheat in sport and you're effectively doing the same thing. You're effectively cheating to make and getting lots of money. So why is that not also?
It could be a fine, okay, maybe, but not a prison sentence. A fine, a huge fine, and maybe community service, that kind of thing. But then on top of that, you also get banned from your sport.
So there are things you can do in sport and get a criminal sentence for. You know, Bruce Grobbelaar was on a criminal trial for match fixing.
Yeah.
And
but again, that's money.
Duncan
that's
Ferguson
money
went to prison for headbutting somebody while he played
but
for
that's
the Rangers.
Okay, but that's assault. Just that's common. That's assault, right? That's just
yeah.
All that is saying this thing that is illegal outside of sport is also illegal in sport. Whereas with these drugs, it's different because the drugs themselves are not illegal. So if you
you're taking those in your day to day life, it wouldn't be
exactly. If we just have a five-a-side match as mates, and I've taken a bunch of steroids. That's fine. No one can say a thing. No one can touch me. I'm clean as a whistle.
But there is the argument of drug law taking into account interpretation and stuff like that. Anyway, you know, we prescribe methadone to people who are recovering heroin addicts. We prescribe cannabis to people in chronic pain.
How many professional world-class athletes are, you know, going through heroin withdrawal?
Yeah, it's just super. Yeah, but the drugs in question are not illegal in any kind of normal circumstances at the moment. I don't know, because like what's the difference between, say, doing this and fielding an ineligible player in order to try and get an advantage in a match so that you make money.
Well, let's just go full tilt. Let's say
you didn't register this player. Like you registered this player 45 minutes late.
Yeah.
You're all going to jail.
Yeah, Alan Kirbishley, you once played Carlos Tevez when he was ineligible to play for West Ham. We're backdating the punishment.
He's not doing anything else at the moment,
exactly.
Is he? Like
you might
stick
as
him
well.
In jail, why not?
But like all you know, all sports have rules of like, or like you know, all the stuff you get about like you get loads of weird stuff at the Winter Olympics about people's sleds having, you know, the runners are too far apart or the wrong set and all this kind of stuff.
Get at the Paralympics, you know, some Aggie guy going on about how someone's got longer legs than him.
Exactly, and you don't want to piss that guy off.
You definitely don't, or break into his house.
No. So this is it. You've got all these rules, and you know people bend the rules to try and win in various ways. Is doping? I don't know. I don't see why doping's a special case compared to those other rules.
Mm.
I think that it is kind of worse than those other things, and so I think that the sports themselves should have stronger punishments. I think people should get banned for life for at least you know serious kind of doping offences.
Mm. With With the way things are at the moment with like doping fence and people get banned for life, do many sports make you give back all your winnings? Give back your winnings?
You can't really give back your winnings in any circumstances. It's more your medals you have to give back. But
can they claim back a financial?
Well, Lance Armstrong is going to be the interesting case. So he's currently being sued by his sponsors to say you have damaged our brand because of that. So if he loses that case, it may in future mean that there is clawback.
What sponsors can do now, even if they don't win the case against Lance Armstrong, what they can do from now on is put into their contracts. Because part of being a sponsor, part of having a sponsorship deal is, you know, all these kind of things will have clauses saying you have to behave in such a way that you are an ambassador for our brand. And so you can just add in a clause which says, and if at some point you are found to be guilty of certain kinds of things, we will ask for, you know, we will require this money back.
Yeah.
Which is all sensible. And I think that kind of thing is actually where the real incentives will lie in terms of people finding out that it's not in their financial interest to do it, because it's already not really in your professional interest, because if you get caught, you know, you lose your ability to play the sport. So it's like your future participation in the sport is at stake. What you also need to have is your past benefits that you've already got from the sport to be in question as well.
Yeah.
So even if you've got away with it for 5 years, it's still like, I might not have gotten away with it for 5 years, because if at any point I get found out, I lose everything I got in that.
So if any sports stars start buying properties in Panama during their career, then we have to think, oh, there's something dodgy going on here, because as soon as they retire, they're moving to Panama and we won't be able to touch them.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's pretty much, you know, there's nothing you can stop once they've got to Panama. Safe as those, isn't there?
Exactly. No one ever gets caught in Panama.
I wonder if these Germans who get, like, the people who are found guilty,
they're going to go to South America.
Yeah.
That's go to Argentina.
That's what I'm suggesting. They go play football in Argentina, you know, and you'll have people trying to hunt them down.
Yeah.
You know, you've got these Germans who've done something nasty, right? Let's call them the Nasties, right? And they'll go to South America and you'll have nasty hunters.
Yeah.
Who go to South America to try and, you know, get back all the nasty gold.
It sounds like the only logical conclusion.
That is, okay, that's my Talking Balls movie. You write your Talking Balls movie and we'll see who does better at the box office, Pete Strong.
Grand.
Can we not, like, then have, like, a crossover sequel? You know, like Alien, like Alien versus Predator, but it's like the nasty hunters, like,
dope themselves up.
Dope themselves up, and then the nasty hunters have to.
Yeah, because you got to fight in a kind
of superhuman nasties.
Yeah, yeah, you got to fight fire with fire. So yeah, like, there's all these guys who like have.
And that's a superhero movie.
They've got the very
there.
It's the very doped blood from the nasties they're trying to find that they're using to enhance their own abilities.
Perfect. That's I don't know why you guys are still
We've
here.
We've developed a whole cinematic universe in like about 10 minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, go off and write it. All fun. I'll do the rest by myself. anyway. Right, let's move on then to our talking point, where I hand the floor to one of our guests to talk about whatever they choose. This week, it's the turn of Douglas Walker.
Oh, right, great. Well,
you sounded like you weren't prepared.
I wasn't. I'm not very well prepared.
That whole sentence that I said didn't give you enough time.
No, I wasn't really listening.
All right.
I was thinking about the nasties. I was thinking about the nasty smashers. So, I want to talk about what I believe is the biggest story in sport at the moment that everyone is callously ignoring. And it's not really a talking point. There's not much to discuss here. I just wanted to flag it up because it's been so. I kind of feel like there's a media blackout. I kind of feel like people are, I don't know, there seems to be an agenda going on in the media to ignore this, because if it were me, this is what
would be discussed on the back pages pretty much every week for the last several weeks.
All right, what is it?
And that is the astonishing turnaround in fortunes of Hartlepool United.
Top.
Well, no, bottom. Until last weekend.
Yep.
So let me hit you with some fat stats. Hartlepool United were bottom of League Two, the lowest position you can hold in the English Football League, from October the 20th last year till March 23rd this year. That's 154 days. 154 days in rock bottom place. They had, in 2014, so the first half of this season, since yep. August 2014, they'd accrued 14 points. I think about 14 points.
Any wins?
So they had won a couple. I think they'd won three times in that period. They had had two managers. The first one left after a couple of weeks of the season. They on January 3rd, they were 8 points adrift at the bottom of League Two. Tranmere were 23rd in that division.
Is that a drift of survival or adrift of the
that
next?
Was a team. Drift of 23rd place.
Oh.
Possibly, actually, those two teams might have been on. I think Cheltenham and Tranmere might have been on the same point, so right. it was both. Yeah. But yeah,
how many go down from League Two? I thought
two.
It was only two.
It's only yeah. two. It's yeah. only two. So, yeah. but still, they were 8 points yeah, yeah. off yeah. of that. Right at that point, January 3rd, you would think that they were pretty sure to go down. They went out to Blyth Spartans in the FA Cup second round. That was in December. They went. Between October the 11th and January 10th, they went 12 matches without a win in League Two. The longest spin they went, their longest stint was a string of four defeats, but they started the season with three defeats in a row, not a single point for the first 3 weeks. But then it all turned around. In December, the club was sold to Peter Harris. Ronnie Moore took over as manager, and so far this season, they've accrued 25 points. They have all season they've won 11 matches, drawn 6. 8 of those wins have been since January 10th. They've now gone up to 22nd. They're out of the relegation zone for the first time. They now have 39 points. And this is the thing that I think is most impressive. In the entire Football League, they're on the joint second longest winning streak, along with Man United.
Really?
They are on a four-match winning streak.
Wow.
But only behind Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have gone from a position where, you know, 8 points adrift. 8 points adrift. I was so sure that was it for Hartlepool. You didn't even have to think about them anymore. What can they do? And then they've just turned it around. They've won sort of 6 of their last 9 games, I think. You know, if you look at the last sort of 10 games, they're kind of 6th in form in League Two. You know, they you know, what's their what? Sorry,
they're running. So are they playing against the top teams in the league? Or?
I mean, in League Two, there's no such thing as a run in. Every team is capable of.
The season doesn't finish. League Two much. Is a bit like Countdown.
No, but I mean. You're playing the top team. Who knows? They're all capable of collapse. For example, Luton. A few weeks ago, Luton were, I think, 3rd in the league, and they now have the worst form in the entire league. They've dropped to 8th, and they seem to be dropping like a stone, you know?
They are.
It's unpredictable. But Hartlepool, they've turned it. I mean, this is one of the most astonishing comebacks. They got relegated to League 2 two seasons ago. Last season, they nearly went down, but they finished 19th.
Oh.
Just at the end of the season, they had a last rallying cry, and they finished 19th. This is a club that has been down, you know, more times than. You know, I can only think of terrible, you know, innuendo kind of comparisons there. But they keep getting back up, you know.
Chumbawamba, that would be the safe one.
Excellent. You know, they've been down more times than, you know, a Pacquiao opponent, but they keep getting back up to be punched in the face again. And I just think we should salute them. There's no other team doing it. You know, this is the sort of turnaround. Everyone's focusing on the Premier League. Everyone's like, oh, can Leicester do it? And the Leicester's
task. Does anyone care about whether Leicester can do it?
Well, can Leicester?
Even
can
I don't care about whether Leicester can do it.
Can Burnley do it? Can you know? Can any these teams that are like, oh, Leicester, they're adrift at the bottom of the table. They're nothing like as adrift as Hartlepool were. You know, Hartlepool were down and out, and yet everybody thinks it's too big a task for Leicester. But Hartlepool are there to give everyone hope. You know, so I think
he's trying
in these austere times.
Exactly, yeah. You might. Personally, be 8 points adrift in whatever
metaphorical sense.
In a metaphorical sense, yeah. You know, maybe you've got mounting debts, you've got drug addiction, you know, you're.
But you too, like Hartlepool, you can pull yourself out of it.
That's essentially my point. I feel like it's a story that is remarkable enough that it should have had some media attention. So I'm giving it the media attention it deserves.
Fair enough. Have you paid much attention to Hartlepool?
Isn't Hartlepool the one there? Didn't they elect their mascot mayor of the town?
That's yeah. right,
yeah. Angus the monkey.
Angus the monkey,
or yeah. Paul Drummond, as he served as mayor.
He is a dude. I saw him being interviewed by Henning Venn on for his radio show. Went to watch it, and he's brilliant. He is
pretty good.
Yeah,
I interviewed him a couple of times.
The other thing
Oh, don't make that mistake.
Well, no, that's what I was about to say, sorry. The other thing about Hartlepool is that their local rivals were Darlington.
Yeah.
Until 2012, when Darlington went into administration.
Yeah.
And that's in a way, that's got to be the biggest kick in the pants, isn't it? When your local rivals go into administration, you lose a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
You know? On the Wikipedia page for Hartlepool, it says the local rival is now considered to be Carlisle.
Lyle?
No, come.
It's the opposite side of the country.
That's it. When your local rival is, you know, when Hartlepool is having to travel to Carlisle for some local rival. I mean, really, their local rival should be Blyth Spartans, and they lost the FA Cup second round. You know?
Yeah.
Blyth Spartans are their conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the score when they lost to Blyth Spartans? Do you know?
Like, come on, Hartlepool expert.
Well, not the experts as well, but like... Did they lose by a lot? Were they thrashed?
No, they weren't thrashed. 2-1. I'm going to say it was 2-1.
Yeah. Let's get the magic book.
I know that they lost 6-1 to Port Vale in the first round of the League Cup.
But who hasn't?
Who hasn't lost 6-1 to Port Vale?
Yeah.
In the round of the Cup.
I mean, I personally haven't. But, yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head what the losing score to Blyth Spartans was, but I think it was 2-1.
We will soon know.
Might have been 2-0.
I suppose they're of a similar
2-1.
Level.
2-1.
You're a genius, Douglas. Yeah.
Well, this is it. I'm just saying, Hartlepool...
Well, he's been following them all season, you know, like...
Well, the thing is, Pete, I will admit to you that I stopped following them for a while, round about Christmas.
He just gave up.
Because I thought to myself, they're gone. They're gone. There's no chance. They're 8 points adrift of Tranmere.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 8 points adrift of Tranmere, I mean, the irony of the whole thing being that Ronnie Moore, who's taken over Hartlepool, was Tranmere manager previously.
Yeah,
that's
kept Tranmere up.
That is the salt in the wound in this whole situation, because I think Tranmere are going to go down now.
Props.
And thanks to Ronnie Moore.
But who needs Tranmere? Really, you know, this should be a topic we talk about one time. Football teams which don't need to exist. Tranmere is one of them. Because Tranmere, firstly... Like, how if Tranmere Football Club didn't exist, how many people would have heard of Tranmere? Secondly...
That's exactly why they do need to exist.
Secondly, it's just a bit of Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. You know, you need your Grimsby Towns. But you need your Scunthorpe United.
Huddersfield. Villa's just a bit of Birmingham.
You don't need... Well, yeah.
Sure, all right.
Like, I would say, you know...
I know what you mean.
There's a lot of teams who are superfluous, and I think Tranmere are one of them.
It's true, but my question is, what kind of reception is Ronnie Moore going to get now when he goes back to Tranmere?
Get his hubcaps nicked?
Yeah. I mean, obviously that. But what sort of special reception? So, yeah, I stopped following them, Pete, but slowly, over the last few weeks, it crept up on me a little bit. I was like, oh, Hartlepool won. Oh, that wouldn't help them. And then they won a few weeks later, and I was like, oh, hold on. They're putting a few this wins. Might be on. You, few results
be,
together.
You'd be known to watch the old Football League show on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah, when he's feeling particularly depressed.
Yep. Yeah.
So, do Hartlepool feature often on the highlights?
What would you say at the real arse end?
They show every match, Pete. So, yeah, they do feature.
They show the goals.
Yeah,
but what I mean is, do they often have them on the slightly more extended highlights?
Well, the slightly more extended highlights on the Football League show, how they choose what match is going to be on the slightly more extended highlights is
a mystery.
I think
they get the championship fixtures.
Yeah, and they cut the head off a chicken and they throw it into a pan. Yeah.
They get all the best games that are happening in the championship that week with all the most exciting teams, decide that they're not going to show any of them, and then they randomly get a 87-year-old man-child to pick his favourite colour, and then they choose one of the teams who play in that colour, and that's the featured game.
Yep. Yeah. Brian Clough said... that I've seen an interview with Brian Clough where he sort of thinks that Match of the Day, back in the days when Match of the Day just showed one match every day, that they should just show, you know, they should pick a match and just show that match even if it's a 0-0.
Yeah.
You know, which is obviously now Match of the Day, they put the most exciting matches first. And some people don't like that because they're like, well, I know this is going to be a lot of goals, and then if your team's at the end, you know, it's not going to be a good match. And the Football League show has stuck to that philosophy. They pick a match, and by God, they show you that match.
Yeah.
And they show you that match for half a fucking hour. Because, I don't know.
Yeah.
Budgets are... I don't know what's going on. But they will show you just relentlessly that match.
They lost the rights.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe they? And not, oh my God. Who's bought the rights to that?
Wasn't there talk... Maybe not. Or there was some
Channel 5. It's Channel 5.
Wasn't there talk about the rights being someone else was going to buy the rights? Or I'm thinking of something that. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I don't think anyone.
You're thinking
cares
of Big Brother.
You're
thinking of Big Brother. Right?
Yeah, Big Brother.
Similar.
Yeah. So basically, if you watch Hartlepool live on the Football League show regularly, you need to have a good look at yourself, basically, or you've got some serious issues with mental health going on that you really need to get seen to.
But, in a way, and this is brilliant, this has come full circle, because this whole topic was really aimless and really a thin premise for something to talk about, but it's come full circle. Because if you find yourself watching Hartlepool on a regular basis on the Football League show, you might think you're pretty far gone. You might feel like you're 8 points adrift.
Yeah.
But Hartlepool United themselves should be an inspiration to you.
Exactly.
So this is just evidence once again of how football can heal.
Brilliant. This is poetic. It's like it was planned.
Beautiful.
We've got there.
It's like it was planned, isn't it? I feel pretty good about that.
It's like you're an improviser or something. Thank you very much for that talking point. So, unfortunately, Hartlepool don't play in Serie A, because I think they do deserve to be the greatest team in the world.
I mean...
Maybe we can make an executive decision to say it's getting transferred right now.
Well, I just think knowing Hartlepool, they might work their way up to Serie A.
Potentially.
You know? Now that their local rival is Carlisle, it might as well be Lazio, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean...
Speaking of whom, greatest team in the world are Lazio. I don't know if that was a deliberate
That was a total...
link. No, they beat Napoli, mate.
Did they?
Yeah.
That is... Lazio... I remember watching Football Italia in the 90s with my brother. I wasn't really interested, but he was watching it. And I was sort of hanging around. And Lazio were a pretty big deal.
They were, because of Gazza.
And then I feel like now they're not.
They basically went bankrupt.
Right.
What they did was they appointed Sven-Goran Eriksson as manager.
Oh, yeah.
And we know what happens when Sven-Goran Eriksson gets involved in anything.
He won some stuff for them, didn't he?
Yeah, but all the money just disappears somewhere. They went bankrupt and they had... See, this was one of the things. They went bankrupt. Most teams who go in these like bankruptcy things, like Portsmouth, Leeds, Rangers, even ones in Italy, like Fiorentina, they get relegated. Lazio never got relegated, though. They just stayed, like, just rubbish. They were just, like... Right. They were just like Villa, Stoke.
I mean, in a way, that's impressive.
Yeah, pretty impressive work. Yeah. But now they've got their act together. Got Miroslav Klose playing up front for them.
Yeah.
And they're the greatest team in the world. So they have got their act together that much.
Can't argue with that.
So they beat Fiorentina 4-0. Fiorentina, form team in Serie A, beat them 4-0. I watched that game, actually. They were really good. Then they beat Torino 2-0, and then beat Hellas Veronas 2-0 as well. So they're still the greatest team in the world. Worst team in the world, predictably, is still in Scotland. But we have seen a league shift.
Oh, yeah.
So it was Motherwell. They got beat by Inverness 2-1. Inverness then beat Raith Rovers 1-0 in the Scottish Cup quarterfinals.
Right.
I mean, it goes to Raith Rovers, drops down to the Championship.
Right.
Raith Rovers beat Alloa 2-1. And Alloa drew 2-2 with Livingston last week, meaning Alloa are the worst team in the world.
I was going to say, didn't Raith Rovers, they beat Hibs the other day, didn't they?
I know.
So it could be
really
Hibs,
close.
If Hibs had been the worst team in the world, that would have been just the absolute best.
Real close. There's also been some internationals, so we've got a new best international team in the world. Well, we haven't got a new best international team in the world. Brazil are still the best international team in the world. They beat France 3-0 and Chile 1-0. Right. So, Brazil, congratulations. Yeah, Brazil, Alloa and Lazio.
Has it been discussed on Talking Balls that Hearts have already won the Scottish Championship as champions?
It hasn't, no, but you can bring it up.
Well, I just
want.
Feel like it's worth a mention. Already gone up. It was a couple of weeks ago, so.
Yeah.
As champions, Hibs and Rangers now fighting it out for that
playoff spot.
Most coveted playoff spot to get back into the. To get the.
Actually,
not
to
even
be fair,
to get, up,
it's
to get the, opportunity.
It's the most ridiculous playoff system in the whole world. It's like Rugby League have decided to get rid of their playoff ridiculousness and replace it with a straightforward system. So there was a gaping gap in the ridiculous playoff systems, and the Scottish Premiership and Championship had to replace it. So it's the next three go into the playoffs.
Third and fourth.
Yeah, third play fourth.
Oh, really?
For the opportunity to play second. Whoever wins that then gets the opportunity to play the second bottom team in the Scottish Premiership.
So there's three matches in this playoff.
Yeah. Lasts for a whole month.
What's the...
There's lots of aspects.
It's all right in Scotland where the league's only got, like, you know, four teams.
Seven.
Yeah, but it means, like, you know, Rangers and Hibs will probably play each other six times this year. Maybe seven. I don't know if they've met in one of the cups.
I mean, there's nothing... If you want to talk about that, Dundee United Celtic has got to be... Have you seen this thing with Dundee United Celtic?
They're just playing each other every week.
Constantly.
Yep.
It's absolutely ludicrous.
I'll tell you what, like 10-15 years ago, if someone had said to me, Rangers, Hearts and Hibs will be battling it out in like in the second
for the Scottish Championship, you'd have said, have they changed the name of the top league in Scotland to the Scottish Championship?
Like, you know...
There's lots of aspects of Scottish sport that I will defend, and the football league system is not one of them. It is just an abomination. This whole thing with the splitting the league halfway through that playoff system, and the fact that you don't get relegated from the bottom tier, is a mess. The whole thing's a mess.
Yeah,
it needs the it needs a firm hand, a fiery sort of reform.
Well, with the millions we make from our movie screenplays, we can go in there.
I'm not chucking my money into that pit, mate. What are you talking about? Well, you'd have to be it's a fool's errand.
Hopefully we'll make enough that we can just throw a bit in there, sort of.
Well, yeah, maybe.
He doesn't sound like he's on board. You can do it with the League of Ireland instead. Let's move on then to this week's ridiculous punt, where I find a ridiculous story from the world of sport. Turn it into a question, pose that question to the panel, and they have to guess what the story is. So this week's question is, why do England's players like Roy Hodgson so much? Pete Strong.
Does he give lovely sort of massages after every game?
Oh, like, you could imagine that, couldn't you?
Just like, so what, let's... Just like really gentle. Like, or... I don't know. I don't know. He's quite loyal, isn't he? There was that whole thing about the other night on when Andros Townsend came on and scored that, which was an amazing goal. And they were like, and they were banging on ITV. They were banging on about it for what felt like hours afterwards about how loyal he is. Oh, he's so loyal. Oh, he's very loyal.
He is quite loyal. Yeah, picking Andros Townsend when he doesn't play for Spurs.
Yeah.
And also sticking by a Premier League striker who's scored maybe 3 goals this season when you've got the top goal scorer in the Premier League on your bench. Yeah, that's loyalty to a fault, I would say.
Walcott or...
yeah. Well, not Walcott, Welbeck. Welbeck scored.
Welbeck only scored 3?
Yeah.
In the league or
in the league.
Okay.
Do you think he hasn't scored many outside of the league? He's had a ridiculously bad scoring rate since he's gone to Arsenal. Dougie.
Do you think he doesn't pick Harry Kane because he's embarrassed that he can't say his name properly?
I was saying this in the office the other day, that he's now got to the point where he's like, Wooney, Howie Kane, all of his big players, he can't say their name.
That's why he likes Welbeck and Walcott, right?
Do you think he thinks they're called Relbeck and Rolcott? Sorry, this is the real low hit.
Well, in that case, I'll come in with my answer.
Douglas Walker, what's your answer?
Is it because he's a lovely man? He is, though, isn't he? He seems like a lovely grad. Does he give people Werther's originals?
I actually agree with you. I was thinking... The first thing came out, I was like, sure, it's just because he's really nice.
Yeah. I mean, surely that's why they like him. He looks like the kind of man that would give you a Werther's original after practice and a bit of advice, you know? You know, he'll be like, Andros, you're going out with a young lady. Oh, well, you know, remember, always
wear protection.
Always be courteous, you know? Because there's nothing a lady likes more than to be made feel special. She knows that you're a footballer. You don't have to come across all flashy. just be yourself, mate. I reckon that's why they like him.
Nice. That's unfortunately not the right answer. He has made them happy. He's made the place a happier place. So obviously this is putting him in opposition to what happened before.
Does he sing Pharrell's happy song before practice?
That would have been good if that song came out before Fabio Capello.
So it's in reaction to what was before, like who's before? So before it was what, Capello?
Yeah.
Who's really strict and everything. So now they turn to the training camp and he's like, "All right, guys, there's a little booze and fags in there." In that room, and
so
like
we're getting on.
Just go and enjoy yourselves.
We're getting more on the level now of giving players consumable items that they want to have.
Pornography?
No, nothing as bad as Chris? Porn, booze, and stuff. We're getting
doped up blood.
Doped up blood is it could not doped up blood, but it could be seen as a substitute for blood in a theatrical.
Ketchup.
There we go. According to Phil Jagielka, so you know the week before an international game, they have a press conference every day. It's always Roy Hodgson and Wayne Rooney the day before the match. But then you get a couple of other players every single day during international week. So Phil Jagielka, it was his turn last week. The most interesting thing that the BBC could get out of the Phil Jagielka interview was the headline, Phil Jagielka, Roy Hodgson has ketchup back on the England menu. That was the biggest news line out of that interview.
I mean, also, to be fair, they could have done a lot better. The headline writers could have done a lot better with that.
They could. It is the BBC. We can't ask for great headlines.
Roy Hodgson plays ketchup.
To be fair.
Off the top of my head.
Yeah, to be fair, there was no quotation marks. So that's a step forward.
What are the few times that they're quoting someone? Oh, my actual God. What is wrong with them? Phil Jagielka seemed to convey a sort of air that there might have been ketchup. No, he said it, didn't he? He bloody said it.
So Roy Hodgson's decision to restore ketchup to the menu has made the England camp a happier place than it was under Fabio Capello, according to Phil Jagielka. This is a direct quote. He says, there can be too many rules. If Fabio didn't want anyone to have ketchup, there was no ketchup. Roy allows us ketchup if we want.
What the hell is this thing with ketchup? Every time there's a tournament or every time there's a game, this always comes up like, oh, we won't be...
It seems to be an Italian thing.
What the, but what the,
Di Canio had the big hang up on ketchup.
What difference does it make? Oh, he's giving them ketchup. Oh, no. Like, is it to do with their fitness? Like, is there something in the ketchup which stops them playing? Why?
I think the mass amounts of sugar.
I mean, not in the amount of ketchup you're going to put on your chips.
Yeah, they're not going to be like, oh, they're not like downing bottles of ketchup before they go
you,
on their pitch.
You haven't seen Wayne Rooney. Yeah. Wayne Rooney, for all we know, could just be a ketchup addict and just be downing them and getting on a sugar crash just before he takes on Algeria. You both seem thoroughly... This is the most unimpressed ketchup I've ever seen anyone with a ridiculous pants story.
Well, it's just...
What's the policy on brown sauce? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, absolutely. What about mayonnaise?
What about daddies?
Yeah.
Because I personally don't eat ketchup. I eat brown sauce all the time. I always have brown sauce.
There we go. I might do an investigation, see if Gordon Strachan's banned chippy sauce in the Scotland camp.
Chippy sauce is really just an Edinburgh thing. So most of the players... won't be that fast.
No,
I imagine they're mostly Glaswegian.
Yeah,
I would if I was a professional.
Salt and vinegar.
I would definitely down a bottle of chippy sauce before I went on, just for that sort of feeling of invulnerability.
You could do a lot worse. Yeah, you could do a lot worse. Gordon Strachan probably has to, you know, whether he allows them to drink Bucky. That's the question.
That is a good question. All right, let's move on then to our next topic. And this is in response to a topic we had on the last episode, where I raised the question of: did the Six Nations prove that Northern Hemispheres had no chance of winning the Rugby World Cup? I've now been prompted, given the final weekend, to ask the question this week of, has the final weekend of the Six Nations proved that Northern Hemisphere sides do have a chance of winning the Rugby World Cup? Pete?
No. I don't think so. Possibly. So I mean, I would be biased and I'll say, oh yeah, Ireland are, you know, we're really good and everything. But to be honest, as much as I was supporting Ireland, like, I thought England were really, really good. Like, I thought England probably were a bit better at times. See, but I don't think any of them are, I think that, you know, you could see, like, maybe England and Ireland, possibly even Wales, getting, you know, a bit further, but I don't think that any of them have a chance of winning it. England maybe have the advantage because they're at home.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of a part that plays in, like, in rugby. You know what I mean? I don't know.
See, my two thoughts behind this are, Ireland don't come into it. Ireland aren't going to win the World Cup.
Yeah.
Not a chance. What my thinking is that that final weekend showed us two things. It showed us that Wales insist on losing their first game every single year and then become unbeatable for the rest of the tournament. If they translate that to the Rugby World Cup, their first game's against Uruguay, which you'd imagine, even if they play really badly, they're not going to lose. And then they could just wallop Australia, get out of that group, and then just get onto a roll.
They're
and
not
just
Australia, go. Though.
Australia are rubbish.
Australia
are going out. Here's my bold prediction of this World Cup. That group, Australia, England, Wales, Fiji, Uruguay, it will be England and Wales that progress from that group and not Australia. And my other thinking of the last weekend of the Six Nations that gives encouragement is England, is that the one problem with England is always that we can't just play the Southern Hemisphere sides at their own game and say, right, we're just going to go at you. And putting 50-odd points over France proves that we actually can. Whether we actually will go out there and do it is a different deal. But that was a performance of attacking rugby that I have not seen from an England team in the whole of my life.
But, and this is, I've had this argument with so many people since that game, what that game proved to me was that England can't play attacking rugby. Because to play attacking rugby, it's not enough to put 50 over on France, because that France team are woeful.
Mm.
And that France team scored 30 points.
Yeah, our defence was
abominable. Abominable. And there's no way that South Africa wouldn't have put more points past you than you put past them with that defence. So that's the problem, right? Like, the whole thing with that last weekend, the reason it was so exciting was kind of... It's one of those phenomena where... It was exciting, actually, because of some pretty bad rugby. In that the Welsh knew they had to go out and slap, you know, like the Welsh. I didn't see the Wales game, I have to say, but they, you know, the thing was, everyone, basically everyone knew that they just had to score the most points.
Yeah.
And for the Welsh and the Irish, they were playing the Italians and the Scots, and it was going to be, yeah, you can go and you can
set the benchmark.
You can go and set the benchmark. You can put however many points you need to past those teams this year at least. And the English, there's no way the English would have played like that if they'd been playing that French team on the third weekend of the tournament. There's no chance that that
oh yeah game and would it, have been if like we'd that. Have been playing and we only needed to win by 15 points, I think won. We'd have yeah. won by yeah. 15 points.
But the point is that situation won't be replicated. It's really unlikely to be replicated in the World Cup at any point where you have to win by a certain number of points to win the match. It'll either be in the group stages, you'll just, you know, if it comes down to that finer balance, that'll be quite unlikely. And if it's in the knockout stages, you just have to win. So then England will fall back into defensive.
But the thing that I found in so I think they had a game plan to go out and score as many points as they could as quickly as they could and then hang back.
Yeah.
And they had to throw that out of the water because France kept scoring.
Yeah.
And that was what I found encouraging, that they had to keep going, oh no, we've got to go and score another try now. We've got to go and score another try. The way that they responded, and England teams of old have said, oh, we've conceded the try, and they've crumbled. Whereas that team seemed to concede a try and go, we have to go straight again. We have to we have to go. And they did.
They did, but again, against that French team.
Yeah.
And I don't think, if it had been against Wales, I don't think they'd have put that many points past Wales. And I don't think Wales are as good. I think the Irish.
Didn't we put more points past Wales?
But it, like, did you?
I think it was first weekend. I think it was a substantial victory. But I'll look it up while we talk.
Past Wales.
Oh, well, we didn't score 50 points. I mean, we won by difference. A bigger margin. Oh, I see. Margin.
Different margin.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the Irish. I put Irish as second favourites to win it.
The whole too World
cautious,
Cup.
Too yeah. cautious.
Really?
Yep.
I reckon. Too careful. That thing you were saying about like England going, showing them go for it. Because I don't think. I think Ireland have a really strong. I don't think they've got the gung ho.
They are in the easiest. They are in the easiest group.
I think
with who's in their
group? France
in
and Italy.
I don't think being cautious is a problem.
I mean against the All Blacks.
But look at the French. Look at how the French get to the final. You know, the French got to the last final. Wasn't by scoring a lot of points. It was by scoring just enough points every match.
England got to the final before by doing exactly the same thing.
It's not. You don't have to go out there and sort of play champagne rugby to get to the final of a World Cup. It's more entertaining if you do, obviously. But I think so for me, it's All Blacks, because it's always the All Blacks, then the Irish, then South Africans.
The Irish over the South Africans.
I think so. I think it's the Irish aren't at home, but there'll be a lot of Irish fans about. There'll be a lot of people supporting them. They're in. They'll be playing in. Sort of. They're used to the conditions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So they'll have that kind of advantage. Mm. I think they look like a pretty strong team this year. They were strong last year. I think they've got quite a good platform to build on. I think I just think I don't think they'll win it really. I think the All Blacks will probably do it again, but if it's not going to be them, I think I would put it at the Irish. I don't know how much it's wishful thinking, but I think the English might not get out of their group.
Really?
I think the Welsh.
We're playing all of our games at Twickenham.
Yeah, I don't think that matters.
Australia, when we played them in the autumn.
Yeah, that's true.
With our reserves.
But Australia, they prepare well for big events. And I think the Welsh can pull it out of the bag when they need to, which is again what happened here. I think they had a shoddy start to the Six Nations, and then they suddenly went, "Oh, hold on, we need to up our game," and they do. I mean, I think it's going to be incredibly interesting, that group. I think it's going to be incredibly tight. I wouldn't like to make a strong prediction, but I wonder if the English might.
Oh, that would be horrible.
I wonder if they might. I wonder if the pressure might get to them.
I think us beating Wales as well. I've just looked up the result. It was a lot closer than I thought it was. I think there was just some euphoria there of finally beating Wales that made me think it was a more conclusive win. It was 21-16.
Yeah.
Wales put some points on late on. I think it was like 21.
Yeah.
21-7 or something like that to start with. But you know, we beat them on their patch.
You
we
did.
Beat Australia conclusively
yep.
a few months ago.
But the Australians prepare well. You can never rule out Australians in a big tournament. The Welsh are also on home soil. For
ish.
Yeah, well.
They're not for the game against us.
They're not, no. That's true. But, you know, they're going to be relatively comfortable.
Yeah.
I can just see it happening.
Because I thought at the time it was really like, I was like, this is stupid. We've ended up with this draw 2 years beforehand that's done this. And the more I'm looking at it now, the more I think they might have actually done it on purpose or tried to fix it. So, because England and Wales are both hosts, you know, the odds are against Australia. We might just end up like gone. Australia are gone before the knockout, which would be great for every other nation. You know, even though I'm a lover of Australian women, I am. I can't think of a nation who I despise more from a sporting context. I have to say,
really,
that's a strong word to you.
More than the French, yeah.
That's interesting.
I have to say,
who's in the Scotland group?
Scotland group. So you've got a chance because you've been given the easiest group.
You just said Ireland was the easiest group.
No, the easiest one to progress through if you're the favourite.
Right.
So this one's easier because all the teams are closer to each other's level. Okay. I think it's actually the most interesting group. You've got South Africa, Bosch, they're through. Samoa, Japan, Scotland, USA.
Okay. So it's
which
Samoa.
You should get through.
You should, yeah, yeah, you should. You should. Samoa, you know, Samoa are good, but they shouldn't be better than Scotland. I'll say it now, I will be pretty...
Disappointed
if we go. You know, if it had been Argentina, I would have said, hands up, Argentina probably could take that. But we should beat Samoa.
Yeah.
So I'm saying it now. That's how
good.
Feel like we've done badly if we don't get through that.
The other one, just because we haven't said it, New Zealand, Argentina, Tonga, Georgia, Namibia. I think those three teams should pretty much just not turn up, I imagine.
I saw Tonga play Edinburgh once.
Yeah?
Yeah,
how'd it go?
It was a good match. Played them at the George Watson's playing pitches in Edinburgh.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fun.
Beautiful. All right, let's move on then. We'll revisit that in the autumn, I imagine. Time for one last tournament, one last topic. Darren Clark this week made the bizarre decision to say that he wanted to get Stephen Gerrard in to give a motivational speech to the European Ryder Cup team at next year's tournament.
Do you think he just thinks it'll be short?
Yeah.
That's really. Get someone who'll make a nice short speech.
He's got a load
who
of
doesn't stick about.
He's got a load of money on the Americans. Or he's going to do a thing where he gets him in, he does the whole speech, gets him out of the room and goes, right, the opposite. We want to win today. Do the opposite. So he's decided to get Stephen Gerrard, motivational speaker for the next Ryder Cup. So it made me wonder, what are the worst motivational techniques or decisions ever made in sport? Dougie.
The Nigerian president, Good Luck Jonathan.
Alfida's saying Charles.
Banned his... do you remember after the 2010 World Cup?
Yeah.
They didn't do very well, and he was like, right... You don't get to play football anymore. As a sort of, like, we need to get better at football, so no football. You know, it was like, that's kind of, as a motivational tactic, denying someone the opportunity to do a thing.
is pretty weird.
Yeah.
Ironically, now he's sort of stepped down from the presidency of Nigeria. I mean, he's a prime candidate to be like a FIFA representative, isn't he?
I thought you were going to say he's changed his name. He's no longer Good Luck Jonathan.
No. I mean, he's got all the skills to be a FIFA delegate, hasn't he?
What skills do you think those are?
Well, you know, authoritarian, you know, likes money, you know, like...
I can't decide.
Very corrupt. I can't. You know?
I don't know.
I don't know anything about Good Luck Jonathan, except for the fact he's a Nigerian president.
Corruption in Nigeria is the big thing. That's why the other guy won, because he was like this general one. I'm going to do something about corruption.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's one of the most corrupt. It's the largest, most prosperous country in Africa, or would be, except corruption is so endemic that billions are lost every year.
Having said that, corruption was the big thing in the last FIFA presidency election, and Sepp Blatter won that one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Good luck, Johnson.
Johnson.
Good luck.
Good
Jonathan.
Luck, friendly Johnson.
That's what. I'm saying good luck, Johnson. That's why he would be good at FIFA.
Yeah.
That's why he would be good.
Why would he be good at FIFA?
He's showing that he can't. You know, he's not strong enough to withhold the anti-corruption lobby. You need someone like Sepp Blatter who can overcome even the strongest calls for anti-corruption.
Yeah.
So that's one, and then the other one is. I mean, it's not. It's. I don't know. I don't know if this is too soon. I'll just say Uday Hussein, and see if you know what I'm talking about.
It's that Saddam Hussein's
son, who was the captain of the Iraqi football team.
Oh, too soon. Oh.
Is it too soon?
No.
He's dead.
He is dead.
He's been dead quite a while, hasn't he? Yeah.
And his motivational techniques involved whipping people with electrical cables, baths in raw sewage, being imprisoned in 2-meter by 2-meter cells. If you if you got sent off, if you lost, or just a draw. He was like, yeah, to be honest, mate, not good enough.
Yeah.
So at the, there was a famous match where it was a qualifier, I think, for the Asian Federations Cup. Mm-hmm. And who was it against? I've forgotten who it was against. United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
And it came down to a penalty shootout, and only all the Iraqi players except for three refused to take a penalty
because they didn't want to miss,
and one of them did miss. And,
wow.
Because he was like, which, you know, he's like, I realised if no one took a penalty, we'd all get punished. So I took one for the team.
Yeah.
Where one is several floggings with an electrical cable. Yeah. So there you go.
Wowie. Pete, do you want to raise the tone?
I don't have any as good as Dougie's. I was trying to think of this. I couldn't remember his name. The guy, I think he managed West Ham for a bit.
Harry Redknapp.
No. No.
Glenn Rhodes.
No, it wasn't.
Trevor Brooking.
No,
Alan Kirbishley.
Avram Grant.
He's a guy, he managed a team in Denmark. And then he was...
Are you on about Martin Olsen, who managed Wimbledon and wore the...
This is recently, in the last couple of years. And he got... maybe it was Fulham. Basically, this guy, and he won, like... He had this reputation for doing...
Roy Hodgson.
Felix Magath.
Right, what did he do?
Oh, maybe it was... Oh, the guy used... anyway...
Was this in a dream?
No. Maybe it was a guy who was with Man United for ages.
Right.
He worked with
René Meulensteen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it him?
He went to Fulham.
And
yeah.
Was it him that was managing in Denmark for a bit? Or maybe I'm thinking something. Anyway, basically, he went round to the team in the dressing room beforehand. And he'd be like, "You're a jaguar. You're a jaguar. You know, you're a tiger, you know, you're a lion," and go on, I want you to feel the animal within and all this kind of stuff, and then send them out to, like, you know,
lose.
And they'd go out and they'd lost, like, loads of times.
Well, jaguars are famously terrible at football.
But they ate all of the opponents alive.
But he found this, like, technique in a book where you had to imagine you're, like, spirit animal and, like, go out and play as
What if your spirit animal was a gerbil? You get transfer listed.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
What if your spirit animal's Andy Carroll?
Really sorry it took me to remember his name there.
No worries, it was quite funny. This is supposed to be a funny podcast, after all. A few for me. Brendan Rodgers, when he decided to do that stupid thing, that he seemed to forget he was on national TV on a documentary when he did the thing when he joined Liverpool with the "I've got the name of three players in these envelopes who will let us down this season." Oh yeah, that's a really good ploy to get your players on board to tell them that you don't trust three of them.
You what, mate?
That's what he did.
He did
a pre-season talk. He just said, like, "I've got them sealed up. At the end of the season, I'll look at them and I'll be right."
What's... And did he? Did he ever reveal them?
Not as far as I know. But he did.
Did he say this like in front of a massive banner of his own face?
Probably. He supposedly has a painting of himself in his bedroom. Massive life-size painting of himself.
Because in that documentary, when isn't there in his living room, isn't there like a put-up?
Picture of him with a tiger.
Yeah. Is it... But there's a on the mantelpiece there was just a picture of him like that, and he did this he shunned this guy with this picture of him like that just over his shoulder, just like staring into the camera.
So there's him, Glenn Hoddle for choosing to get old Eileen Drury get the faith healer, discredited faith healer, and then start slagging off disabled people. Yeah, that's really going to motivate the troops, Glenn. But the worst one is just getting Alan Shearer in to manage your team for 8 games at the end of a Premier League season. I have to say that is the worst motivational decision ever.
Well, yeah, it's not wise, is it? It's not wise.
Well, ironically, it was Dennis Wise, who was director of football at Newcastle at the time.
There you go. I'm still perturbed by this Brendan Rodgers revelation. If he never revealed, it feels like it could be some sort of Derren Brown trick, but only if he then comes out at the end of the season and he's like, "Whoa," and opens them up, and everyone's like, "Oh, they were disappointing." That's right. Yeah. But if it's just a weird, you know, I've written down in my diary at home.
Maybe he did reveal it to the players, but the documentary had finished by that point. So
you'd think it would make the news.
Yeah, you would imagine so.
You'd think people would want to follow up with it.
You would.
Well, I've written down on this bit of paper here the name of one of Pete or Adam who's going to disappoint me in the next episode of Talking Balls.
Oh, man.
And I will reveal in that episode who it was.
Well, we look forward to that episode. Until that episode, you can, of course, follow us on SoundCloud. Just search for Talking Balls. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Talking Balls. And we're on Twitter, @PodTalkingBalls. Find us on iTunes as well. All the usual gubbins. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk some more sport and reveal which of me and Pete is the most disappointing to Douglas Walker. Have a good couple of weeks. Bye-bye.